Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Good morning. It's 9:06, Wednesday, September 4th, 2013. I will call the Dallas City Council briefing meeting into order. Beginning this morning with our invocation is a neighborhood pastor in my neck of the woods and Ms. Gates' district, Pastor Andy Wildman of the Grace Bible Church in North Haven, Inwood. It's good to have you here. Andy's a native of Tyler and a graduate of a school that has the Longhorns as their mascot with a degree in business. He was a businessman and attended Dallas Theological Seminary, where he served in administration and faculty. He was the first executive director of the Center of Christian Leadership. While working for the seminary, he started Grace Bible Church. He left the seminary to return to business for a few years and then joined the staff at Grace as associate pastor. In 2002, he became the senior pastor. He's got two daughters, one in the area and the other in Munich, Germany. He loves leadership, history, jazz, and cheering the Longhorns. Pastor Wildman, thank you so much for being here. Please, the invocation following that, Ms. Gates will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Will we all stand?
Thank you, Mayor. Please pray with me. Father, thank you for living in a great city, a city that's had an impact throughout the world because men and women were willing to serve and willing to sacrifice and willing to build. We pray for this council, for the men and women and their staffs who serve the city. We pray that you would give them wisdom as they deal with limited resources. Pray that this would be a city where everyone has an opportunity to live quietly and well and reach their potential. Pray for justice and mercy to the disadvantaged as well as those who are the powerful. We pray, Lord, that you would bless this meeting as well as this city in the years to come, and that you will provide in a significant way so that it will bless many. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I also want to recognize that I don't think we'll be this long today, but today we'll definitely be done by 2 because we'll be recognizing the Jewish holiday that starts this evening for our Jewish community in Dallas, a very important group of citizens and leaders. With that, Ms. Rios, we will begin our open microphone speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You have only 2 speakers this morning, Jerry Russell and Robert D. Jones, Sr. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or become boisterous while addressing the City Council will be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. When the timer turns to 0, please allow the next individual their turn. You will address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker is Jerry Russell. Not present. Robert D. Jones, Sr. Not present. No speakers, Mr. Mayor. We move now to your next voting. Your first item for vote is approval of minutes of the August 21, 2013 City Council meeting and August 27, 2013 City Council budget workshop.
We got a motion to approve. Before we do, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried. Excuse me. Ms. Rios?
Oh. Item number 2 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. You have for your consideration to the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission. Taylor L. Toynes is nominated by Councilmember Hill. To the Animal Shelter Commission, Rebecca Ann Poling, to fill the Animal Welfare Representative position, is nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. To the Board of Adjustment, Peter A. Schultz is nominated by Councilmember Medrano. Clint B. Nolan is nominated by Councilmember Allen for appointment to Panel A. Larry P. French is nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. To the City Plan and Zoning Commission, Michael W. Anglin is nominated by Councilmember Griggs. Gloria M. Tarpley is nominated by Councilmember Cadane. John Shaleen is nominated by Councilmember Allen. Mr. Shaleen is the only nominee this morning that is being appointed to fill the 11-13 and the 13-15 term. All the remaining members' nominees are for the 13-15 term. Also to the City Plan Commission are Margaret B. Murphy, nominated by Councilmember Gates. To the Landmark Commission, John E. Johnson is nominated by Councilmember Gates to fill the Urban History category. To the Park and Recreation Board, Amy W. Monier is nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. Robert P. Sims is nominated by Councilmember Kingston. To the Civil Service Board, Jeff Bryan is nominated by Councilmember Kingston. And Sydney J. Miller is nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. To the Housing Finance Corporation Board, Eric Anderson is nominated by Councilmember Kleinman. And to the Reinvestment Zone 4 Board, Cedars Area, Michael Barrett is nominated by Councilmember Medrano as the registered voter.
Category. Thank you. Before we take a motion, I need to recognize Mr. Allen.
My nominee to the Planning and Zoning Commission, John Shaleen, he's had attendance problems off and on. But at the end of the day, I knew that as we were going in. John's been my planning and zoning commissioner for probably 3 years at least, and we'd had discussions that particularly in the month of July he'd be gone. And John is an outstanding individual. It was a situation where I told him I didn't care. He'd go if he wanted to go, because at the end of the day, I was going to renominate him anyway. His family business type thing. So, but I have to make this official request of City Council for y'all to go ahead and help renominate John Shaleen.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. I'll now entertain a motion.
Second.
We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Item number 3 is the first reading of the appropriation ordinances for the proposed fiscal year 2013-2014 City of Dallas operating grants and trusts and capital budgets.
The first time that we will put this budget into record. We have to do that to be able to amend it, and we'll be doing that later. So this is kind of gets the budget on the table, so I'll entertain a motion for that. We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried. With that, I hope that everyone got my email that Ms. Blackman sent out yesterday and understood the process that we're going to be going through. I've asked Mr. Allen, as chair of the Budget, Finance, and Audit Committee, to meet with you and start to pull together the final budget amendments so next Tuesday we can be a little more productive than we were last year. Last year we had a whiteboard going and we got there, but it was a little bit not as efficient as it could be. So if everybody can do that work, get with Mr. Allen. He'll talk to everybody and start to prioritize and bring that report to us next Tuesday. So thank you.
Your next item is item number 4, a public hearing to receive comments on the proposed 0.7970 per 100 property tax rate for the 2013-2014 fiscal year. This is the first public hearing. The second public hearing will be September 11. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on agenda item number 4? Are there any speakers? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
Okay, motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Public hearing is closed.
Your briefings continue, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Our first briefing is DFW International Airport proposed budget for 2014. I think, Mr. Allen, your committee heard this yesterday. I want to introduce Chris Poinsett, who's the CFO. I just want to say personally, I've really enjoyed working with Chris. I think you're a great CFO, and I look forward to your presentation. I also want to say that I guess this is the final month for Jeff Fagan. He is going to be leaving us and retiring, and as you know, we have appointed a new CEO that I think is going to be at the first board meeting this Thursday. So we're beginning that that 10 yards in the relay race, you know, where you start to hand off the baton, and we do not want to get out of the lane, Mr. Atkins. Exactly right. With that, I'll give you the podium. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I'd like to recognize Mr. Sam Coates, who's the chair of our Finance Committee, is here today with us.
I want to reiterate, I think we are very fortunate to have Sam on board. Some people knew Sam, some people didn't. And as soon as he got on, about two meetings, the ones that didn't ran up to me and said, boy, the Dallas City Council knows how to pick him. And thank you for helping us lead.
Thank you. Today we're going to present our 2014 budget. First, to start a little bit about our core business of passengers and air service. This year's budget for passengers is 61.2 million passengers, which represents about a 2% growth from this year. And if we achieve that, that'll be the highest year of passengers ever in DFW's history. We also have a record number of international flights. We have 54 right now. We're expecting to add at least four more next year and have a 6% growth in international seat capacity. We are also hopeful for a resolution on the merger. We think that if and when it's concluded, it will have a positive impact on the airport. Our budget this year is $651.3 million. That's $7.8 million less than last year's budget. It's $1.2 million higher than our outlook. And all the number comparisons you'll see in this presentation is to our outlook, which is where we expect to come out this year. The DFW cost center, which is where our non-airline revenues are, we expect our net revenues or net income from that to be $91.8 million, which will be a record. Revenues are budgeted to be 5.7% higher than our outlook for the current year, which was a record year. And because we are as successful as we are in our use agreement with the airlines, we're actually going to share $20 million of that back with the airlines to reduce landing fees this year. With respect to airline costs, how much they'll pay us for terminal rentals and for landing fees, those will be $19.4 million higher, primarily in the terminals to pay some of the debt service on our terminal renewal and improvement program. And but even with the increased cost, we still will be in the first quartile, very competitive in large hub airports here in the United States. Here's a comparison of our budget to the outlook. Operating expenses are actually up $8.7 million, 2.4%. Debt service is down $7.5 million, or 2.6%. We'll talk about those individually. Here's a walk forward from our outlook this year of $360.1 million. We have a total of $6.6 million of budget reductions this year in the budget. We had one-time projects for some demolitions of the old AirTran guideway. We've also had a number of asset management projects for improvements on the airport that were one-time in nature and not repeated next year. We have a new parking control system that actually went live at 3:15 this morning, and so you'll be seeing the old plazas coming down in the next few months, but our new system is in. Because it's automated, we will be saving about $1 million, primarily in labor costs next year. And then energy rates we've locked in, and they'll be $600,000 lower. With respect to some of the increases, we have a merit pool of 3% included in our budget this year. Pension and post-employment benefits are actuarially determined for us. We have an extra $2.3 million in the budget this year for that. We have a number of contract increases. These are primarily inflation-adjusted for our bus contract and for our Skylink maintenance contract. hard stand operations. Good news, we've got 54 international destinations and record international flights. Bad news is we're running out of gates. And at some times during the day, we're having to hard stand operations and actually bus people over to the terminal. So we've added $1 million for that. With respect to health care, about 4% increase, $600,000, very, very manageable. We have less CNG fuel credits in this year's budget. That's a revenue to us. Last year we received 2 years because of an oddity. We've got 1 year budgeted that Congress will approve this year. And then property insurance is up $500,000 as we redo our terminals. The property values go up, and we have to increase the amount of insurance or the cost of the insurance. Some volume-driven increases. We are partially restoring our de-icing budget. We only had one de-icing day this year. We normally have somewhere between 7 and 10, so we're adding money back into the budget to account for that. And also with our terminal renewal and improvement program going on, we've got some incremental maintenance costs to manage the operations while we're constructing in three different terminals. We have $600,000 in marketing increases for some promotional programs and some conferences that are coming this year. And then we have a CEO contingency that we are restoring. We did not use it this year, so we're restoring it back to $2 million, and that allows the CEO to approve anything that comes up during the year. So that all adds up to $8.7 million for a $368 million budget. When we move over to the debt service side, gross debt service, the actual amount we're writing checks for is actually down $7.5 million. But we also collect passenger facility charges to pay for that debt, some of that debt service. And you can see those are down by $25 million. And the reason is because we've been pulling down money out of a reserve account that we've collected over the last 10 years, and that reserve account is finally running out. So what we see there is net debt service that gets charged to the airlines and the DFW cost center is actually going up about $18 million. So here is the DFW cost center. We can see that we're up $14.1 million in revenue management revenues, and these are the revenues that we pretty much control. Parking is up $7.9 million. We're up there because we've got more passengers projected. We also have a dollar increase in our remote product from $8 to $9, and we have a $1 increase in interday rates for non-toll tag. We're really trying to push as many people to toll tag, so if you got a toll tag, there's no increase, but it's a dollar otherwise. Concessions is up $5.2 million due to more passengers, and I don't know if you've been in the new Terminal A, but the new concession space is like 60% more profitable per square foot just because the options are so nice, so we're seeing great benefits from that. Rental car is up $1 million due to destination passengers, an increase there. So if you drop down, those are the major increases. You drop down, you see the net bottom line is a $4 million increase in this cost center. And again, $20 million of that will go back to the airlines. Next slide, please. Oh, sorry, I missed it. Airline cost here, walking forward, our outlook this year is for the airlines to pay $233 million. That's for landing fees and terminal rents. The budget this year is $253. You can see that about 78% of that is due to debt service and agreed upon changes in the use agreement that the airlines signed with us 3 years ago. When we drop down to the operating expense category, unfortunately, due to sequestration, the federal government is paying us $1.3 million less for law enforcement costs for some services that we provide, specifically in the terminals for the TSA. And then we have our hard stand cost increase that I talked about before. The net of other operating costs is up 4.5. And then the airline, non-airline revenues that we're sharing back is actually, that's a revenue, so it shows as a negative there, as $5.2 million higher. And then finally, the next category, reduction in air service incentive program. We actually reimburse new international flights for up to 2 years for free landing fees to attract new service. It's been very successful, as I mentioned earlier. That's actually down a little bit. We're still going to spend $10 million on incentives next year. This is a comparison of landing fees and terminal rents. You can see landing fees are decreasing steadily. That's because when we share money back, it goes to reduce landing fees. Terminal rents are going up to pay for the debt service on our terminal renovation program. So here's a summary of the budget. We're asking for you to approve a budget of $661.3 million. That includes a $10 million contingency that the board has to approve for usage. I will point out that we will be coming back to the board to use $3 million of that very shortly. We did apply to back up a second. Customs and Border Patrol Protection has a program that we applied for whereby we'll be paying up to $3 million in overtime to pay for more agents because of sequestration. They're cut, so we are stepping in. It's kind of a double-edged sword. We really don't want to be in the business of doing that, but at the same time, we want to make sure we can do whatever we can to reduce the lines for passengers and from Dallas coming back and from international destinations coming here to DFW. I do want to point out we have tax sharing between the properties that are owned on the airport and the taxes that are paid there between the host cities we actually are the airport to where we are on the air, excuse me, host cities of Coppell and Irving and Euless and Grapevine. We this year paid $5.5 million back, or we didn't, but the cities did, back to Dallas and $5 million to Fort Worth. I wanted to just take a brief moment to talk about our terminal renewal and improvement program. We're currently under construction in Terminals A, Terminal B, and Terminal E. Terminal C will start after A is complete. I've got some pictures here to show you. It's a $2.3 billion program. And again, we're really renovating the guts of the terminals, really the electrical, the air conditioning and heating units. It's very little is being spent on cosmetics. To the second phase of Terminal A should be open at the end of next fiscal year. We are also you might have noticed the new parking garage in A. We're building the second section right now. It's got the green and red lights to help you find where to park. We're also under construction on Terminal B. And there's another picture of the footers going in at the parking structure. We're also under construction in Terminal B, and this is about half the terminal really is down right now. We're also putting a stinger on the northwest side that'll add about 8 to 10 gates. And we are also doing a connecting stinger between the B and D terminals. These are international swing gates, which will alleviate some of that pressure on new international service. And then we have Terminal E, Phase 1, will be opening in 2 weeks, and this is where all the other non-American Airlines carriers operate out of for domestic service, and we have their new ticketing area that's in a new baggage claim area there. So we're excited to get that open and start the next phase. And we're also very excited that DART will be out to the airport at the end of 2014. The station that we're working on will be completed in the next 5 or 6 months. You can see if you're driving out the north end of the airport, you'll see this construction on the right side of the airport. And that's what the station will look like when it's done here in a few months. That's the end of my presentation, Mayor. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Chris, thank you for coming from Budget and Finance yesterday. And the question I asked you yesterday is that when you look at Denver Airport and Miami, and when we talk about Aerotropolis all over in the marketing technique, and we said the economic impact to this region, and our numbers is very low, like $20-30 billion difference. Could you tell me why they low and what we need to do to make sure those numbers show compared to other airports?
Right. Different airports are using different methodologies for their economic impact study. For the last 15 years, we've just used TxDOT's update that they do for the whole state. and we are going to change that. We are going to solicit another economic impact study to be done that will be on a more comparable basis to what you're seeing in Denver. Our number is about $17 billion, and Denver's is up in the 30s, I guess.
Right.
And when we saw that, we go, well, what's going on here? Because clearly the economic impact here has to be equal to the Denver's, so we're going to do a different study.
Okay. Another question on revenue. On your gas leases that we have done at DFW, how much revenue have y'all received since y'all did gas leasing?
We've received just over $300 million in natural gas. That's about $185 million on the original amount that we got, and then another $115 million over the last 5 or 6 years.
And did most of those revenue go into reserve? Did you spend it for improvement? What did you...
They go into our joint capital fund, and about probably $200 million of it has been spent to date on terminal improvements primarily. And we did reimburse the cities of Dallas and Fort Worth their original contribution back in 1987.
Right. Okay. I guess another thing, how is your American Express lounge going on?
We can't wait to have it open. It'll be another couple of months. We'll have you out for the grand open.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
You know, Mayor, you're correct in your statement that Chris is one of the finest CFOs around. There's no question about it. We see it time and time and time again. Slide 6. Debt service. You mentioned yesterday, I believe, DFW's been out there 40 years. You know, but when I go out to DFW, I do not see a 40-year-old airport. What I see is something that just looks almost brand new and just as nice as it is. It's proud. I mean, you're so proud when you go out there. But you had to take care of that airport. You've had to take care of that airport, and you've had to do the debt. Luckily, Mr. Atkins talked about the $300 million that they were able to get on natural gas is a benefit. But also, you've come and you've got what? You just did the $2.3 billion bond fund, which when they do these, they always have to come to budget, finance, and audit just for the blessings per se. But educate me, you know, over the past few years as a CFO, you've taken advantage of the recession, and about how much money do you guesstimate you've saved on refinancing of bonds?
It's been close to $1 billion in total refunding savings over the life of the new bond issuances. So significant savings for the airport, for the airlines that pay the bills out there, and we've been very fortunate. Rates are, you know, average yields are in the 4.5 range versus 6 before, so we've been able to really take advantage of it. We appreciate your approvals to allow us to do that.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
That's a good thing. I like billion.
One last thing, slide 7. And on slide 7, we were talking about rental cars and stuff, but you made one little real quick point, and he used the word destination passengers. And that's a nice word. That means they're coming here, renting those cars, and getting out here in the Metroplex. So, again, I've said it before. I'll say it again over the next 2 years. What an asset. That's, the economic engine of the Metroplex. And, again, Chris, just keep up the good work, buddy. You've done us a really good job. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, Mr. Ponset.
Good morning.
Thank you for your presentation and the work that you do for us at our ocean. Mr. Ponset, on slide 2, tell me, please. I'm sorry, slide 1. Slide 1. Go to slide 1 first, please. Tell me where the new international flights are coming from, please.
We've had 2 to Mexico, 1 to Colombia. And actually, the last 3 have been Mexico, and then one in Colombia.
And please tell me what the status is of the work on a direct flight, Dallas, Africa.
It's a great question. We are actually in deep discussions with 3 different African destinations right now. We actually have service potential to Morocco, Ethiopia, and Kenya. And we've been visiting each of those over the last, in fact, we've had visits 2 to 3 times each with the airlines representing those cities, Ethiopian Air, Kenya Airlines, and also Morocco Air. And so we are, I can't say as we've got anything finalized, but the discussions are there, and each of those airlines are getting new aircraft, and they're able to fly here directly. So things look rosier than I think they ever have.
What about the possibility of a direct flight to Cape Town?
Cape Town is still not in the near-term future. South African Airways is going through management changes right now. We visited them 2 years ago, and we were actually down there last just five or 6 months ago. And we've had discussions, but they're just not quite ready to do it. If they would, they'd probably have to do a one-stop to get here.
You, Mr. Coates, the mayor, the entire DFW board is aware that I will continue to ask this question until the plane lands at DFW. We all know that, correct?
Absolutely.
On slide 2, please. How do our landing fees compare? Where are we in the landing fee landscape?
Well, our landing fees are very competitive compared to the other large airports. The way we compare the total cost, because every airline and airport's use agreement is different. Some pay more in terminal rents and less in landing fees and vice versa. So we look at both of those together, divided by enplanements, and that's kind of what we call airline cost per enplanement. And when you compare us to the large hubs, we have been number one over the last few years. We're actually number three, the third lowest cost amongst the large hubs in the country. And it's going to go up for a little bit because we're doing all the new improvements to the terminals. So debt service is going up. But our goal is to always be in that top quartile, which is where we are now.
Who's lower than us? Who are the two that are lower than us?
The two that are lower than us right now are, Max, help me out. We've got Phoenix, Charlotte and Phoenix. Oh, Atlanta's over fourth. I'm sorry. I thought a penny or two lower, so it's not material.
Nobody should go to Charlotte or Phoenix. They should come here. Slide 4, please. The parking control savings?
Yes.
You said it's because of automation.
Yes.
Where did the people go? Will those people be employed elsewhere on the airport? Where did the people go?
Great question. We have been anticipating this automation for the last 4 to 5 years as we've been working on the new system, and there are no full-time people that are losing their jobs. We have temporary workers right now, and so we've planned for that, and there are no layoffs.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. And would you, you touched on it, but I think it's very important for us as a city, understanding the new equipment that is coming online and what that's going to mean from DFW standpoint. If you can just speak a little bit more on that.
Sure. The new Boeing 787 is the aircraft that really is, it's the right size aircraft, approximately 250 passengers, and it can fly further than any other aircraft today, and it really opens up every part of the world. So flying to Africa, flying to the Middle East, flying to China and Asia destinations, that'll all become available. And, of course, we've unfortunately had the delays in that aircraft, but they're starting to come in, and we're getting a lot more airlines in those parts of the world that are talking to us and saying, okay, it may not be next week, but it's in the next couple of years. Those are real viable options.
And as you've been harping on Africa, I have on China. So they're being pulled in two different directions. So
we'd love to have some good news from China here soon.
We would love that. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you. Thank you, too, Mr. Poinsett, for an excellent report. We just keep getting better and better out there. It's neat to go out there and see the construction going on. You know things are happening. Let me ask you a quick question on slide 7. Do you have oil and gas revenue in there?
That's a great question. Now, oil and gas revenue per our use agreement and per our bond documents go into our capital fund. Any sale of land or mineral rights goes into the capital fund. I think our budget this year for revenues is roughly, Max? $5 million this year.
$5 million from oil and gas revenues?
Correct.
And are you all still drilling?
We are still drilling. We've actually, we've got about 100 wells that are drilled. The production is gradually falling off. We've elected not to drill more given the price being so low. But if we get the price back up in that $5 to $6 range per MCF, we'll start drilling again. We originally planned to have over 300 wells on the airport.
Fantastic. Okay. That's all I had, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me, if you could go to that last, very last slide. I just need to see a picture. The very last.
That's the dart slide.
The very last slide. And yeah. Now, what? Go back to that slide. Now, what? Explain this picture to me.
Okay.
What
if
am I looking at?
Terminal A is on the northeast side of the airport, and this dart station is between International Parkway.
And that's enough. That's a dart station.
That's a dart station.
Just leave that picture right there.
Okay.
We'll get back to dart in just a moment. Leave that picture right there. I just wanted to make sure that was dart. You know, and look at that picture and compare Lancaster. I want y'all to really see it. I want to beat up the airport. First, Mr. Coates and Chris, everybody at the airport, I'm total supportive of DFW and everything that you all have done. And sometimes you have to take advantage of an opportunity when the opportunity presents itself. And I've been screaming so much about DART. And we have to have this, so I support this. But this very picture, Mayor and our Grow South and everybody else, DART is going to have to do something on Lancaster. I'm just not going to sit here and continue to just be supportive of DART, and we're still going, and they find money to do everything, but they cannot find money when it comes to South Lancaster Boulevard. There was the first rail line that was built in this city, and we have the oldest technology, the raggedest presentation of DART, and when I see these things, oh, I support it. Looks great. But at the same token, this message is not for you. This is not for DFW. This message is for DART. And I want DART to understand to stop neglecting us in the southern sector. And that's what they're doing. Just leave that picture up there. All right, I'm through with DART.
Well, before you go, I think it's important. How did that get paid for?
DFW paid for
it. That's fine. It is DART's responsibility because the citizens of Oak Cliff and the southern sector has been riding DART for 30 years. And certainly they've invested enough to get something versus what is there. I don't care who paid for this.
Beautiful.
Okay? DART needs to step up to the plate. And I'm going to stay on it every time I see them. All right. Enough of that. Back to the gas. But leave that picture there. And get a picture of that and bring it to my office. AC, I want that picture. The gas drilling, I want to say that you all have made how much money off the gas drilling?
$300 million total.
And you're still drilling?
Yes, sir.
And it's not been a problem?
We've had no problems.
And had no explosions?
No problems with respect to the drilling activity.
Okay, so no explosions and no blow-ups and none of that?
No, sir.
It's been a safe situation out there. Okay, it hadn't hit into the water lines. Fire hadn't been coming out the fire hydrants and the water hydrants. None of that. And you've drilled over 1,000 wells.
100
wells. Okay. All right, enough of that. It's not very often that my colleague and I agree, but I'm not going to get off the bandwagon as related to Africa. Ms. Hill and myself, and I've traveled to Nigeria, and it was a wonderful flight. I can't seem to understand why Houston and Continental Airlines has a direct flight from Houston to Nigeria, I believe it is, Lagos or somewhere.
Lagos.
Where do you know where it is, Ms. Hill?
It's Lagos.
And they have the plane that travels from Houston, Texas, nonstop to Nigeria to Lagos. And so they've accomplished a goal that I feel that we should challenge and try to see how we can do it. We're just 200 miles up the road from Dallas. So I don't, you know, for me to sit here and to hear that we have to have this equipment and the 787 and this, it is happening in Houston. So where I'm not admonishing, don't y'all get me wrong, but I want you all to roll up your sleeves and figure out what Houston figured out, because they're flying to Africa from Houston. And it's important for us to know that is a possibility and is a reality, however they are doing it, but it is happening. And we need to have a direct flight here. Or even if we had a flight where it had to stop somewhere to get here. But we have to do something better than just sitting back here. And every year we're talking and we're going and we're screaming about Africa. We're screaming about China. Well, Tanel knows about China more than anybody. But he goes there quite often. Africa, we must find a flight. And Ms. Hill, you're head of transportation. This is one that I will be chiming in to make sure that you all understand I'm not going to stop until we get a flight to Africa.
Direct.
They know what I'm talking about. Direct. Because once I go up, I don't want to come down but once. But what is stopping that? Can we not do it? And how did Houston do it?
If we had the aircraft,
okay,
we would fly it.
Okay.
Okay. But we have to work with the airlines, and they are the ones that make the decisions on where they're going to fly.
So we need to get on American.
Yes.
All right. So
and
then
American
why
is one.
Okay. Just tell us. This is good guy, bad guy, and we are the bad guys in this case. So Ms. Hill, can we not? And if it's proper for me to address you, can we not address American Airlines at one of your transportation meetings and challenge them to bring this direct flight? They have the aircrafts. All they need to do is fly it. Their competition is Continental in Houston. We would fly out more people from here because we are in the middle of everything. We are the hub. Can we not bring American Airlines? We'll help. Can we not bring? Would you suggest that we do this? What can we do? You on the board? Will we bring
on
American
the board
Airlines?
American?
No, on the board of the airport.
Okay,
I don't give you that promotion.
Yeah,
yet.
Right.
But
one of the issues besides the flight is the airline partners that they create.
Okay.
Continental has got airline partners in that part of the world. American has not, if I can speak to that point. And so as we look at expanding throughout the world, this merger is critical, Mr. Carraway.
Okay.
And anybody at the state level that is against this is not doing what's right by the citizens of Texas.
Right.
Okay? They're just not. And the politics are being played in a major way here.
Okay.
And if you want to be in Africa, we got to get this merger done. We'll open that whole area up. And I think some exciting things will happen.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll quit now, but I just wanted to make sure that I'm chiming in and on record as relate to Africa and the direct flight to Africa. And we can close out now with a fade to black on that dart. fade to black. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
Hi, Chris.
How are you today?
I'm good.
Good.
I just wanted to ask you where our parking rates are in comparison to other airports.
They are very much in the middle. We'd be happy to update the analysis we gave you last year, but really we've only raised our lowest remote parking product this year. We're at $18 for toll tag in our terminals, which is very, very comparable and very favorable to other cities, larger cities.
I'd like to see that detail.
Can do that.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins.
Yeah, Chris, you know, Bonsea and Ms. Carway, thank you very much for bringing up South Africa. You know, I was in Johannesburg with Aerotropolis in May. The mayor did point out U.S. Air and American Airlines, a great merger called U.S. Air, is working with South African Airline right now. If that merger goes together, there will be a great, in the future, that we might have a direct flight from South Africa. There is probably over 447 people come to DFW every day from South Africa. And so we have been tracking those numbers. So, Chris, I know that We just went to Johannesburg for the first time in the last 8 years we've been here. And I think when DFW did realize there was a whole opportunity in Johannesburg, from Cape Town to Johannesburg to DFW, you know, we just got to go back and keep going. And we did make a very, very tremendous stride in Johannesburg, talking about a South African airline. So this merger is very, very crucial, as Amara said, because if we do, their planes is there to go. You can tell in Dubai, you know, they got 787 gates already lined up for those big planes. So there is opportunity to make that move.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. You know, I want to add one other thing. One of the issues that we have had is a perception that Houston is the biggest market in Texas, because that city is. And the reason we've had that perception is Dallas-Fort Worth have this continual sense of competition. And that is just cutting off a nose of spider face. As I went to South America and with Mayor Price, and we started talking about Dallas-Fort Worth being the fourth largest metropolitan area in the country, New York, L.A., Chicago, and then Dallas-Fort Worth, and the fastest growing, people didn't even know it. They thought we were just kind of a little city in North Texas. And so as we, and as you've been saying, we've been working on this a long time. We've been working in China a long time, many, many places, and we're ready to kind of springboard. But as we go forward with this international strategy, it's paramount that we are like this with our sisters, sister city in Fort Worth. And so if you hear me talking regionality, okay, that's one of the reasons. I think it's money in our pocket if we leverage Fort Worth and Fort Worth leverages Dallas. And so if you go on any trips and everything, talk Dallas-Fort Worth, okay, and it makes a lot of sense to people because that's what this Metroplex is called. With Mr. Allen.
I have to go agree with you 1,000% because, again, we are the heartbeat of the Metroplex, and that's exactly right. And I know we talk about DART quite a bit. At the end of the day, we have to really remember, as we talk about American Airlines and the rest of them, how we talk up in a positive tone, particularly with DART. The funding for DART, the revenues that they get, and Sandy, you refresh my memory, but it's probably from fares is 14%, 15%. Yeah, it's 12. So I was given the benefit of the doubt by going up with inflation. Point is, it's very low from fares. Where you get your money, and why we have the largest light rail build out in the North American continent, is from the federal government. They got about 6-7 years ago $700 million. So it's, and the reason is because they're always on time, under budget, the reputation. And so we always have to be very sensitive because that's how we get it and how we build it out and how they get their money. It's not from fares or any of this other stuff, but it's from Washington. So you're exactly right. We just it is about the Metroplex.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Thank you, Chris, and again, thank you to your team. I know your team works very hard to simplify it and be this tight. Thank you again, Mr. Coates, for your leadership, and please pass that on to Chairman and the whole team back in the shop. Excuse me? I will, as soon as Mr. Donahue gets here, that's a good point. Mr. Atkins said, when are we going to get to meet the new CEO? And I will set that up in a briefing, and we can all meet him. He can talk about his thoughts. Mr. Allen.
Real quick, one last thing for all the new council members, and I'm sure y'all will invite them out, but be sure to go out and take the tour of DFW. It is worth it's worth your energy. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Councilman Dane, when you went out there, you took the tour, and everyone knows that Councilman Dane has his pilot license. And the rumor was is when he got in one of those big planes at test drive, it was the first time it actually crashed and broke. Is that right? Anyway, but do take advantage of it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. All right, we will go to briefing B. Mr. Gonzalez, I'll let you kick it off.
Mayor and Council, this summer, as you well know, we expanded our efforts to try to get the information out to the public with regards to our budget. We thought it might be timely since it's just happened in terms of our getting into a new area of virtual meetings that we have Jill Jordan give us some of the highlights of what just happened.
Right. Well, it's all fresh on our minds. So, first of all, thank you to the guinea pigs who helped us and took the risk of trying out this new technology. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. I think we all had fun. I think you all did as well. So the goals for doing this was we were trying to increase citizen engagement. We were trying to get to a broader audience. I was hoping we were going to get more younger people. Because if we look at the median age of people that go to our town hall meetings, they're not the 20-somethings at the meetings. We wanted a more convenient way to have citizen participation and then, of course, increase knowledge of our citizens of what's going on. On the next page, talk about the services that were provided. We hired a firm that... This is their business. They do these telephone town hall meetings for cities. What they essentially do is buy the registered voter database, and they have technology that calls out to all of the registered voters that have telephone numbers, and they do it in a span of 5 minutes right before the meeting. And then they have a moderator who handles the meeting, and the meeting is done as both a webcast and the telephone town hall. It's done simultaneously in English and in Spanish. And then we get reports. On the next page, talk about how the meetings worked. We did the meetings from this room, so we used our AV equipment. The meetings were 1 hour in length. It took 5 minutes to call 20,000 phone numbers, and to me that was one of the most impressive things is when they started that call out to know that in a span of 5 minutes, 20,000 people, 20,000 phone numbers are being called all at one time. The moderator was the voice that they heard at the end of the line. He was welcoming. He was cheerful. He greeted them. He told them stay on the line. He gave them the format. And so they were collecting all of the phone calls. People were starting to log on to the websites as well. When the phone calls go out, people were able to push, a button so that they could hear it in Spanish. So you had the one phone call resulted in going to either of the two languages. When the meeting actually began, the moderator then launched the meeting, greeted everybody. We had a short film that starred AC giving a budget overview, we condensed all of the budget town hall presentations to basically a three-minute video. So we were hitting the high points. Then the council member greeted everybody, gave their words of welcome, and just like you all do at a normal town hall meeting. And then it was opened for questions, and so the citizens could they could call in their question, or they could come in versus the web. They could come in either language. If it came in Spanish, we had translators there to translate it into English. And the questions would appear on a monitor that staff had. So just like in this meeting, you had that whole table full of staff. So it was a regular town hall meeting. So you had all the usual staff people there. Only they could see the question that was going to be asked prior to it coming live on the air, which helped us have better answers. The questions were pre-screened by the company to make sure that they were on point. So if they were, if we had encountered anybody who had been obscene, that kind of thing, they could have been, not allowed on the air. Their question needed to be relevant to budget. And so we had the staff available for questions, and the staff would come up to the microphone and answer it just like at a town hall meeting. We had the option of doing polling questions so that the council members could, the questions were preloaded, and we worked with each one to determine what he wanted to ask. And we could ask the audience questions, and we could get the answers back live during the presentation so that you could discuss them if we had wanted to. Citizens were given the option of leaving their email addresses so that you all can build your database of citizen contacts. And then the next day, we got a thorough report from the company with the call volumes in both languages, the results of the polling question. And then at the end of the call, you were able to stay on the line and leave messages for us. And they got a detailed list then of all of the follow-up questions. And we turned those follow-up questions over to 311, and 311 is going through and handling getting the information back to the citizens. So we had six districts who participated in the five meetings. So Mr. Cadane and Mr. Allen shared a meeting. Mr. Kingston was our first one, and we had Mr. Callahan and Mr. Atkins and Mr. Caraway. So thank you for all of you for doing this. So we ended up calling over 100,000 citizens. Out of the 100,000, just under 1,900 participated via the phone. 322 participated via the web. Now, on the next slide, this gives you the breakdown of the participation. And one of the things that struck me about this is you'll see the Spanish. And if you'll look at Cadane and Allen, 79 people were participating in the Spanish only. And Mr. Kingston's, 36 people. And so we ended up with Spanish speaking only in all of the districts, which shows to me, at least, that there's a latent demand for that all across the city. And so it was a useful service in all of the different districts. This chart shows you kind of the maximum number of participants. So Mr. Atkins at 430, it was his peak. And he had 53 on the web, so almost 500 people attended his town hall meeting. And so you can see the different statistics. So these were, you know, big numbers compared to the regular town hall meetings. Now, on the next slide, sorry, gentlemen, but we went ahead and pulled your sheets from your regular town hall meetings, and you can see that the numbers were much lower in terms of the participants. And so the average participant was 34 per meeting, whereas these other meetings, we were having over 100 people staying on for, you know, basically the whole time. And, you know, we had peaks of 400, 350, 200, and that kind of thing. So very dramatic differences in participation. Now I want to show you some of the examples of polling questions. The way the polling questions worked is you could ask a multiple choice question or any kind of question that had up to five answers. And so then the participant would press, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on their phone and get their answers back to us. So these are some samples of questions from the different districts that were asked. And the nice thing about it was we could get the information on the air so that, you know, in the future, if we had an issue that we wanted to talk about, you could have that feedback from all the participants during the meeting. Moving on to lessons learned. The first night, we had poor audio quality, particularly on the video of AC. We got that corrected, and we did not have that problem again. One of the things that we ran into and the company had never run into was the poor quality of the webcast. It was pretty spotty, and it seemed to be really dependent upon the participants' computer setup, who their internet provider was, and what internet service, kind of like Explorer or Google Chrome, they were using. So some people kept getting kicked off, and other people had no problems whatsoever. The company even changed their internet provider to push it out. We had the same issue. Our takeaway from that was that just a lot of areas of our city are trying to do internet over the old phone lines and that kind of thing, and not everybody has, you know, a real high-powered home setup, and the webcast kind of needed that. So that's something that for the webcast, we ended up, the company just wrote that off, and we didn't have to pay for it. But in the future, that's something we're going to have to consider because the quality was so poor. The phone calls that we placed right before the meetings, that was, I think, the real winner. I think that's how we got a lot of participants. I think the fact that they didn't have to call another number, they could just stay on the line, and that worked really well. What we did see, though, when we did the joint meeting is that because we were doing 40,000 phone calls, it took 10 minutes, so we were already started in the meeting by the time all of the phone calls had gone out. So it seemed to work a little bit better to have just one district at a time. We got comments from citizens. They sure did like having the town hall meetings in their homes. You could hear them when they were leaving their messages. There were pots and pans and TVs and kids and dogs and, you know, all the things that happen inside of our homes. The citizens also seem to be pretty comfortable asking questions because it's not like in a meeting where you got to stand up and, you know, you're the one putting your hand up in your face and you've got to walk up to the microphone. So it was easy to ask the questions. And, again, the demand for Spanish we saw in all the different districts. Now, the other thing that was kind of funny is one of the first people in the joint meeting, you know, I was hoping that we were going to get younger people, and she said, "I live in Presbyterian Village." And I'm like, well, this is great, but, you know, so I think we were calling, you know, we were calling the registered voters, and the younger generation doesn't register to vote at the same frequency that, you know, older folks like, you know, me and you all do. So we might want to find other databases that might be like cooler kind of places where we have younger people's phone numbers and call them in addition. So that would be something that we might want to look at in the future. And then after we finished this presentation, we realized that we had another lesson learned on a completely different piece of software. What we did after this in preparation for this briefing is we sent an email to those people who had given us their emails with a survey to say how was the meeting. And it turns out that our survey tool does not work on iPads, and it seems like a lot of people that wanted to fill it out were on iPads, and so we had to call them and get the information over the phone. So we're working with that vendor, completely unrelated, to tell them that, by the way, your software, you need to update this and, you know, be a little bit more cool as to devices that you support. So the kind of the purpose of this briefing was to think about next year. And while it's all fresh on the minds of our participants, and so I had emailed the six of them and saying that, you know, today I was going to kind of throw this open to you all for you to give your impressions of how well it worked and what you liked and what you didn't like. And then you all need to kind of talk about whether this is something you want to pursue and what kind of technologies you might want us to look at for next year because, you know, there's different options.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else, Mr. Gonzalez?
No.
Thank you. I'll just jump in and do my two cents right now. I thought it's great, and you look at the attendance. We had, you know, 11, how much, 11,000?
We had 1,900.
I'm sorry, 2,000, okay, nearly 2,000
yeah.
participants on this.
Yeah, with the web.
And, you know, 300 live. I mean, that mm-hmm. speaks volumes right there. And I've joined in on Mr. Kingston's, which I thought you did a very good job, Philip, on that. Well, that's what I'm about ready to say, okay? I couldn't – there was a screw-up on that. I kept hitting that one, and no one got back to me. No one, just they ignored me. Okay, and I said, I'm the mayor, and that's why they ignored me.
That could be.
Exactly. So something. I don't know if you got any other feedback on that, but I kept, you know, when they told me to hit one or pound or whatever it was, nothing ever happened. But the hour was great, and I enjoyed it. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. I think it was great. I mean, I think it was great to do it. You know, I did something different from everyone else. We did poll. You know, we polled the people, the ratings, how you think about how we're doing business in the city of Dallas and doing the telecast, the phone calls that people call back in. And we said there were 45% said they agree, you know, we're doing a great job. 45% said they're not doing a great job. But every time they did come back, and we did take, I think, about 10 to 15 phone calls, question with my deal. I did one polling. I said, you know, how was I doing as a city council? I did pretty good. I did better than the president. So I didn't give up. I got 49. I got 49%. So that's pretty good. You know, pretty good. But I got a whole lot of good, but not great. I got one poor. But the point is that it was a great, you know, exercise. I think we can do a little bit better. You know, it was the first time. I know at my town hall meeting, you know, that I don't know how we'll get into this all the time because I got 56 square miles and people, you know, work during the daytime, different hours a day. When you talk about Cleveland Ride all the way to Southwest Center Mall, that is a big difference. And what I did at my town hall meeting, I put flyers out. I say, hey, you need to come to town hall meeting. If you don't come to town hall meeting, this is what we might be doing in the future. But I still believe that this is a great tool, but I still that you still need to get with the people. And the reason why you need to get with the people, because those citizens, the senior want to come and talk to the city manager or talk to the department person one-on-one. And we're getting too much, you know, iPads, you know, email. You know, I look at my office, everybody emailed and text back and forth, and we don't get a live person. It's just customer service. I think it's great to do it, but I hope we will not do it for all the council, and this only thing we do, we're not going to the citizen, because the citizen is customer service, and with those people to do it, and I look at the amount of money you spend. I did ask Gene, I said, Gene, how much it costs to do this? And the price you gave me was very, very small amount, how much it cost for that town hall meeting versus what I ain't going to put on the spot versus what this costs to do. And I'm going to weigh that different, you know, there. And Merritt, I think to do this was about $5,700 per.
Yeah, the five meetings cost us $38,000.
So we know, and I got a figure, and I'm going to hold Gene to the number. I'm going to keep it there. It was very, very low. But again, this is a great tool, and I support 100%. But Merrill, I just tell everybody, when you have National Night Out, you know, just a town hall meeting, it's a different when someone look in your eye and talk to that police or talk to that cold person or talk to that person to respond. You don't lose touch with technology. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins, Ms. Alonzo.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Jordan, thank you very much for that presentation. I also, and perhaps maybe I didn't understand it, but I'm looking at page six, and you say that, for example, not to pick on Mr. Carraway, but an example of the first one, that's how many were called, 17,000 or 17 plus the 34. And then out of in the 11 part where it says max number of participants, that's how many participated, responded. How do you?
So the number of people who called was the 34 plus the 17,460,
okay.
And out of that, 34 people opted for the Spanish, and then on the Spanish, the maximum number participating at one time was 11. So you had people coming in and out.
Okay.
And so the maximum number of Spanish was 11. The maximum in English was 351. So they gave us a bar chart that showed by minute how many people participated. And what tended to happen is around the 10 to 12 minute mark, they would reach the peak. And by 30 minutes, the peak had gone down and then stayed flat for about the last 30 minutes. So it really indicated that 30 minutes was the time that people were really participating and paying attention to the meeting.
Okay. And then you talked about the young, and one thing I learned, if you, because you mentioned that the people that we called were the registered voters, mm-hmm. and, of course, there's a great number of us that registered sometime back before, you know, cell phones came on.
Right.
And there are a great number of them registered voters now, but when I'm sure when we called the home number.
Right.
And, of course, who answers the home numbers?
Right.
At, the home phones, excuse me. So, you know, it would be like the home phones compared to the cell phones or, you know, the new devices or whatever. But I also, one of the questions that I had was ask the comparison to the town hall meetings that we have in our neighborhoods compared to this. I got some parts, but I look forward to Ms. Chipperfield providing that information. And I looked at the percentages of the participants compared to the ones dialed in the in what you had. And as far as, you know, them participating, it's over 20%, and that's very good. I'm very pleased with this. And I was just going to ask Mr. Gonzalez if we had any thoughts of using this service for other projects within the city. So it's just a question.
We're just really trying to feel our way through this, and given this experience, it gives us some basis on which we could entertain that notion in the future, but we don't have any definite plans at this point.
Well, in the budget, we've got planned $25,000 for technology for citizen engagement. And there are some tools that we're looking at. We've not honed in on what we're going to do, but there's two tools that we're looking at. One goes on the web, and we can pose questions to the community, and they can give us responses, or they can pose a question, and people can like it or dislike it, so that you get kind of an unofficial pulse of the community. And so we could use that kind of software, say there was a big controversial zoning case or plastic bags or some other kind of policy change. And that's a tool that a lot of cities are starting to use to kind of get a feel for things. And Austin does it as an example, and they'll put it out, and the citizens can say, I want, you know, a bike lane somewhere, and everybody can say, oh, yes, that's a wonderful idea, or other people say, oh, no, that's a terrible idea. So that's one piece of information, one kind of technology. The other one that we're looking at that would, I think, would be kind of jazz up town hall meetings is the kind of the polling devices at the meeting so that everybody could have the device. You could have the polling question, and everybody would vote, and it instantaneously gives you the answers. And that would be another way of doing it that, you know, could be a fun and informative way of doing town hall meetings or other kind of public meetings where there's a particular issue that, you want to get the vote on. And so the draft budget has enough money for one thing, not both, or we could use it, the money, for doing more of these kind of meetings. So it's really kind of up to all of us to decide what it is we want.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. Jill, this is a great effort on this, and it's appreciate that y'all are putting effort into trying to figure out how to reach out to our constituents using some of the newer technologies. As you know, I did not participate in this primarily because of the cost. $6,000 a meeting seemed high to me, and I was actually looking at, based on the number of initial participants, that cost us about $16 a participant to hold these meetings. And that's based on the initial calls. And I was kind of wondering what our retention was. So how many participants do we have at the end of these meetings? And do we have an idea of kind of what our loss was over the time?
Yeah, we have that information. We can compile that for
right.
you.
Right. Okay, that would be great. I'd like to see that because if someone doesn't stay on because of either technical problems or other issues, you know, I think that's important. One thing that I wanted to mention was that when we first started talking about this earlier, a couple of months ago, it did come to the council pretty quickly, and there were a couple of different options available, but when it really came down to the end, this one option was really the only option that we were able to execute on. So those other, while some of those other options were discussed, they weren't actually available this year, and I hope y'all will pursue some of those other options moving forward because some of them are quite a bit less expensive and possibly less complex and more reliable. In particular, I know that the city has licensed the new Microsoft 365 products. It has Link in it, which is a video conferencing product that's server-based, so we don't even have to use our own servers. We probably could run similar meetings through that. I realize there are a lot of other complexities, especially with the number of participants, things like that, but worth pursuing. The other thing I want us to think about when we're thinking about expanding our database, it is beyond just the phone. As we have all been the beneficiaries of some a lot of social media input from a couple of controversial issues recently, we can see the effectiveness of that, and maybe we need to be looking at utilizing some social media tools to at least get the information out, but also maybe to provide these town hall meetings, and I'm sure y'all work on some of that as well. I think Monica had a good point with regards to the cell phone, but even beyond that, it's the cell phone, the telephone. That's just one of the many tools we could be using for. So I think overall, I appreciate y'all did this work. I think we learned a lot. I would like to see us explore other types of options that may be a little more nimble and a little more reliable. And is a good learning experience. I definitely appreciate that we're reaching out to more constituents. That seems to be a challenge across the board. I think the other thing to realize is that it's kind of a double-edged sword. You want to respond to the people that are voting, and that's why you use the voter registration records, and I think that's appropriate. But, of course, we do represent the entire community, even though parts of the community that may not be registered to vote. So. Thank you for your help on this, and excited to participate in it next year.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and sorry we couldn't get your question on my deal. I'm pleased that you were participating. Jill, how on earth did the mayor get a call for my town hall?
They didn't.
You called in?
I called in.
Oh, okay, cool. Thanks. Let me start by saying ICM Gonzalez, your staff did a really good job across the board, not just with this, but with the budget meetings, town halls in general. I know that at the joint meeting that Scott Griggs and Adam Medrano and I had at the farmers market, the turnout among senior staff was really amazing. I mean, to have people that are director level and above there, I think, is a real benefit to the citizens. And then the mayor showed up, and then Jennifer Gates showed up, and then we had luminaries from all parts of the city. It was pretty nice. Jill, I thought you did a great job with this. Mine went really smoothly, except for the technology piece, which we didn't have that much control over, and that's my first point. If the cost on this was too high, it's as an experiment, as a learning tool, I'm not been out of shape about it at all, but going forward in the future, we need to look at which parts of this technology we can bring in-house and whether we can get the cost down on this, because the added participation is great, but it just has to be at the right cost. And I would say, you know, here's part of your issue. The outreach tool that we can use is very limited. There are very few registered voters who have a phone number associated with their voter ID that is actually available to be called for a purpose such as this. 20,000 on average for the ones we did in each district, many less in some districts. And that's versus when we reset, you know, the districts in 2010, approximately 60,000 registered voters in each of our districts. That's your problem. Younger people are not registered to vote at lower rates than older people at all. Younger people are highly registered to vote, but you can't reach them because they don't have phone numbers that we can call. And we had minimal to no outreach electronically in terms of email addresses or on the web. And that's not the city's fault. That's really not the vendor's fault. It's just hard to do. But going forward, I would encourage us to look at ways to do webcasting more than phone calling. If we're getting good participation now on phone, I'm fine to continue to do that. We obviously had some people who wanted to participate, but in the future, I think this is going to be more and more web-based. I'd love to, you know, look at the city have the ability to do, not just for budget town halls, but for all kinds of issues, kind of a Reddit Ask Me Anything type meeting or just a webcast where we can get on the computer with our constituents. Let me reiterate that not just for this, but for all of our city services, we must provide Spanish content. We absolutely must. We need our city council meetings translated. We need to have translators available for Spanish-speaking participants. I know, I see that you're on board with this, so I'm just reiterating. We're moving in the right direction. The other thing I would say is that with the participation by phone, how did we do in terms of screening those? That was one thing I had a question about before we got started. How did we determine what was pertinent, what wasn't, who got through, who didn't?
That was folks from the company, and so they were asked the people, you know, what's your question, and mm-hmm. so they made that call. So they've done this before. They knew it was about budget, so they were kind of pre-screening the ones that, you know, I'm reporting high weeds or that kind of thing. They were told to leave that as a voicemail message.
Okay. Well, overall, good job. Those are just my concerns about moving it toward the future. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mayor. And I guess the question I want to ask, Jill, as we move towards the future, when we start having these budget town hall meetings, because in some districts, You mail out the information about the meetings, and I had good attendance in mine, but I know that it could have been more people to come, and then you have a lot of old addresses where people have moved out, moved away. So how do we handle that? So what's the future of what we're looking at as we start these budget town hall meetings? Are we trying to do something different for the near future?
Well, I think the issue of reliable addresses, email addresses, and telephone numbers mm-hmm. is going to continue to be a problem for us as the society is just mobile and there are all these changes, and it's really shocking how much it is. And I think we all have to use every opportunity to try to get addresses, telephone numbers, and emails. For example, this company was willing, if we had had databases of email addresses, we could have turned those over to the company and mm-hmm. they would have contacted them. Or if we had databases of phone numbers, but I think we were a little reluctant with, you know, all of the open records kinds of things.
Right.
And, you know, having databases like that, you know, giving those over. So no one at this point turned over any of our information to the company. So they were just relying on a data set that they had to purchase. But we were trying to collect stuff. So, you know, that's something you guys keep addresses. We keep them. We've turned those email addresses mm-hmm. that came in over this thing over to the PIO office so that they can start receiving city newsletters and that kind of thing. I just think we're going to have to, kind of as a city, really kind of think through how we're doing that, how we collect that information, keep it, and it's we're always going to be chasing.
What about seniors? And the reason I didn't participate in the telephone or the webcast, because I like the face-to-face with my individuals who vote for me. And so if they have concerns, they can see face-to-face. But how do seniors, were there a lot of seniors participating?
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Was it with the webcast or the telephone?
Well, we did not ask people's ages, which, you know, 2020 hindsight, we could have done some demographic kind mm-hmm. of work. And we could have done some demographic work at your town hall meetings, too, to find out, you know, how people, how they get their notice, how do they know to be there. And so there's a lot more data collection that we could be doing if we wanted to. But just listening, you know, when you listen to somebody on the phone, you can kind of tell their age.
Right.
My impression was that people were middle-aged and older, as opposed to there were not young-sounding voices.
And I have to agree with my colleague that how do we get more young people involved in this process of participating in government? And that's one of the things. They're not coming out. Some of them are voting, but they're not coming out to the town hall meetings. They're not participating. And we do have, I think, a database where they voted in the last presidential election.
Well, in the social media, I think we probably need to figure out how to do this kind of thing, you know, on Facebook or
and Twitter.
Twitter or whatever, you know.
Well, let me ask you this, Mayor, and I'll be finished. When we start, said that we started a budget town hall meeting. We can call a budget town hall meeting any time, just for our budget. If we did something where the mayor, we had it over at the convention center, and the mayor opened it up and then just had people in just to start doing Twitter on different topics and subjects, how would that go? Could we do something like that?
I'm thinking we could. I think that's the challenge that you all are giving to us, to try to come up with some alternative ways and alternative media
mm-hmm.
for getting input from citizens.
Okay. So the person would have to almost be there. Those young individuals have
to be. They would have to be there, but we would have to be there to do the tweets.
Okay.
And have the response
to respond
in
back.
Real time.
Okay.
That's you know,
right.
It could always be done lagged, but that mm-hmm. doesn't have the same okay. result, in my opinion. But
okay, so that's where I see our downfall. Even at some of my town hall meetings, I did have a couple of young people there who voted, but surely that's where I see a huge problem. As we age, and as the baby boomers get older, and then you got that gap of young people. And as seniors become, you know, older, you got that huge gap of young people who are not responding to this whole voter participation and voter registration. So in the upcoming years, we're going to have a really hard time in this city if we don't start getting them involved in this political process.
Thank you. Mr. Allen.
All right. Well, I was kind of like when I first saw it, it was about the cost. It was looked pretty expensive, but it goes back to some of the conversation we're having, which is basically how do you get people involved? You go to my town hall meetings. I have I only have one because I have a compact district, you know, and I might have 50, 60 folks there, and I might have 20 or 25 staff that are there at the end of the day. So I had to make my decision was how do I get more people involved? Do I send them a postcard? Answer, no. You know, this space-age technology, so we're not going. So you get them involved by doing exactly this, and I've had seven times the number that got involved in it. Is it expensive on the front end? Absolutely. Cost way too much money. Now, in the grand scheme of things, probably not, but cost extra money. But we engaged more and more of our folks, and probably wouldn't hurt maybe set just a little bit aside maybe some of the money in the budget amendment, whatever, just to continue this technology of engaging our citizens and stuff. And you're exactly right. It was so cool. Our very first call, I shared it with Councilman Kadane. And the only thing I regretted was Councilman Kingston, you went first. I would love to be able to say that Councilman, the two old men on the council went first and led the way. And dadgummit, you beat me to the point. By one night. There you go. So, but it was cool. We had a senior that called in, and she didn't announce where she was from. She just said she lived in a retirement home off Forest Lane. Well, I could tell by the voice and such that it was Presbyterian Village. But then I mentioned Presbyterian Village, and then she went in talking about her kids. I knew her kids. And it really personalized things that you wouldn't probably have gotten in a big audience type scenario. So all said and done, I think the interaction was very good. This is the way to go. Down the road in the future. We'll still have the face-to-face, no question about it. That's what's so neat about it. I've got 47 town halls, HOAs. I got 47 homeowner associations, and trust me, we go to all we can, every single person around here. So we get a lot of that face-to-face interaction. So you get that interaction as you go out to them. As we all know as council members, the budget process is really starting in January. By the time you get to the stage that we're at and we're having these things, and I don't want to have to say it, but ladies and gentlemen, that's late in the game. You're late in the game. If you're not there in January, February, March, you're late in the game. And so that goes back to the homeowner associations. And one last thing, Mayor, and I'll put an end to it. This was a pioneering adventure. And as I look up on that screen, you know what I see, Miss Grayson? I was going to give you a hard time. Anyway, they're all men up there. You're so fun to pick on. But anyway, I was just going to point out they're all men, and you're supposed to come back at me and challenge me and stuff. But anyway, I'm going to move on real quick off that, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Don't get go there. Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And AC and Jill, first let me say this was just tremendous as far as I was concerned. I probably have more town hall meetings budget than anyone, or equal to maybe one, but I have six, and it's because of the configuration of my district, and so I have to kind of spread out and have those. But AC, let me ask you something. Last night, I had a town hall meeting in Glen Oaks, and of course I had staff there with me at the town hall meeting, and every department pretty much was represented. We were there at 7 o'clock. Now, how are those employees' times figured in as related to pay? Is there a cost to that? Is it overtime, or what is it? And let's affix some type of a cost, if any, to that last night for the couple of 2 or 3 hours that they were living there.
For the very most part, as Mr. Kingston was talking about, you're talking about higher level supervisors and above type individuals that are there, and so they are not. They're on a salary basis and not being paid overtime. There's some few staff that might be eligible for some overtime and or comp time, but that's really a small cost associated with it. I think we have an overall number, some of the logistics that are associated with it, and relatively speaking, it was a less cost. Now, while we're not having to pay those out-of-pocket dollars, that's a lot of time that a lot of folks that are out there with all the different meetings, and we find it difficult to even have enough people to just staff all of the meetings that are held throughout the community. They are important, and so we work to make that happen, but it starts wearing down staff to be out there.
So that's good to know. So if I decide to start a town hall meeting at 9 o'clock at night, then those salary people would have to be there. I'm not going to do it. Don't worry.
No, I'd be the only one to be fine with that, but the other one.
No, okay. Right. But that's very important to know and to see, because there's some type of a cost affixed to it when we're doing it versus what Mr. Allen said. And, Jerry, you mentioned that through this you went quadruple your numbers in attendance. And I bought into this thing, and I'm totally supportive of it. And I am going to commit to
to have fewer meetings and more of these than all of the meetings that I've had. My thing is that I want to reach out more to not just the people that voted for me. I want to reach out for the people in my district. That's number one. All 89,000, I want to figure out how we can get a call. And at least they can be made abreast. It won't be 89,000 calls because of the number of households, but that number may be 40,000 versus the 17,000. I also have a suggested way how we should maybe reach out. If indeed, Jill and AC, we have a system already in place with the reverse 911 that has the numbers in place. Is that something that could be utilized and trimmed down? If we had a disaster in a particular area, could we not contact that area using our reverse 911?
The 911, reverse 911, I should say, technology is much different than what was used in this.
Right.
And quite frankly, we were so impressed with whatever that technology is. We're trying to find out what was used in this as mm-hmm. opposed to the 911. We could not have the same kind of speed in getting out those calls anywhere near what was done in this.
But could we not, I hate to use the word burn a disc, but could we not take the numbers and supply those numbers district-wise from the 911, since the 911 reverse has the data?
Yes, sir. The databases, that is a good point, and one that we would should be entertaining as a means of focusing on particular areas that just are the numbers that are in those those households.
In those households.
Now, it's still not going to totally get at this issue with respect to so many people. So many people are operating with cell phones.
No, I understand that. Here's my point. I think that we should do everything as related to outreach. I think that we should take that reverse 911, burn the disc, hand that to the people, and get it back because we want them to keep it, okay? And I think that we should do everything social media possible. You can do your Facebook, you can do all the other stuff that you need to do in conjunction with that. I think the goal should be to reach out to the people best we can. My mother's at home, and so she's not sitting there tweeting, Facebooking on the computer, all right? And if her telephone rings and she's going to answer it, maybe, okay? and then she would hold on and deal with it from there. So seniors, I think that we have to look after the seniors, and we can't, and I agree we got to move forward, and so we will never stop the technology of today's use of technology, but we still have to make sure that we look after those that are in nursing homes, that are sitting down and wanting to participate, and they have the right to participate, and we have a responsibility to include them. So I'm just suggesting that we do everything that we can to reach out to everybody. I have 89,000 people. Of the 89,000, maybe you can cut that in half to 40,000 calls. And is there a cost associated with the per cost with the company that we're using?
Yes.
Okay. Well, could we not, you know, I think we need to go out and kind of negotiate something of a flat, especially since we are one. How many cities are using these people?
Lots all around the country. So,
but none are like Dallas. So they need Dallas on their resume. So I'm just suggesting. I understand that. But we got to figure it out and reach out to as many people as possible. And from that particular point, when you look at the response that I got, and you look at like what Jerry say, we go out here and I bring all the staff and I get there and I got 25 or 50 people, you know, and those are concerned people. But I can make the phone call and do a district call and promote the fact that we're going to call and get more people involved. I think the next time we do this, even though our numbers reflect what they do now, this is the first time. I see this thing doubling and tripling the next time because people are going to begin to say, hey, look, this is neat. You're going to have people all over the city calling like the mayor, even though he couldn't get in. You're going to have people calling.
he could have screamed, "I'm the mayor, I'm the mayor." They just weren't going to let you in on Mr. Kingston's calls. But my point is that this is something I think that we ought to do, and we should find a way to minimize the calls best we can and do a stronger outreach best we can, using every avenue available to us, every single avenue, from PSAs to everything else, and then we can go from there. So, but good job. Thank you, Jill. I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
and it was visual, too, Mayor. I mean, we were here, so it was people were tuning in from the televisions and the at home in their own comfort of their homes and their cars and their computers. So this is a huge deal. And I think we should move forward and figure out next budget cycle how we find the money to do more meetings. I'm going to do less meetings. I promise I won't do more than three. Maybe I'll just try to do two of these instead of any of them at all. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Maybe.
Judge Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Gonzalez and all of the staff, thank you so very kindly for being at my town hall meetings, for your participation, for your presence with the people, and your willingness to stay and visit with the people. I do, as you know, insist that my town hall meetings start early and that they end on time, because I am very mindful that staff is there and needs to go home and take care of the children and other things. I did not opt in to this process. I do not anticipate that I will opt in next year. I recognize that this is the way of the future. However, I do think that there is not enough opportunity for the public to have human eyeball-to-eyeball contact with their elected officials. I do not want to give that up. Mr. Allen, I go to as many town hall meetings as I can get to. I make other opportunities available. I go to churches. I go to nursing homes. I go everywhere anybody invites me and the calendar will permit. But this is yet another opportunity for face-to-face interaction. I think people need that, not only with me, but also with the staff. I think people need to see the people who work for them and know what a fine, fine staff that the City of Dallas employs. Years ago, when I was in seminary, one of my professors said to me, if it is important, you have the conversation eyeball to eyeball. That's what I want. I recognize that other people differ, but that's what I want. And that is why I say I don't anticipate that next year I'm going to opt in. Like Mr. Caraway, I have 6 town hall meetings. I did cut it down this year, but I have it because of the size of my district and for the opportunity for the citizens and voters and constituents to have interpersonal contact. On the Spanish speakers, when I had a huge Spanish-speaking population in my Pleasant Grove area, in my former district before redistricting, I had a separate meeting that was a Spanish-speaking meeting. Mr. Gonzalez was kind enough to facilitate that for me. It worked, but it was advertised as a Spanish-speaking meeting. I think we need that. We need to find a way to accommodate that. But at the same time, I still wanted to be present and hands-on for that. Young voters, young citizens, is a constant challenge. I had some at one of my meetings where the mayor came. Incidentally, Mr. Mayor, you were the star. I'm accustomed to being the star of my own show. But Mr. Mayor showed up and took all the star power, just took all the wind out of my sails. There were young people at that meeting. But we, I think, have to work on getting young people involved on a continuous basis. They will not show up just for town hall meetings or just for any one particular item. We have to constantly reach out to young people wherever they are. However, I still want to see them, that young constituency, face to face. This is a wonderful idea for those who opted in, but please, everyone, don't force people like me to opt in, because we won't. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Jill, and your staff. Y'all did a great job on this. Jerry and I did this together. It went off without a click. It was perfect. I think you said, told us we had as many, and I think it was 4,000 hits, 3,000 to 4,000 hits that night. And we had no less than 200 to 400 on the line, constant. That's pretty good, because I had two town hall meetings this year outside. I had maybe 75 people between both of them this year. So I think we reach a lot more people this way. One of my concerns was we didn't get to talk to enough people. I mean, I guess we spent too much time on the people we talked to, but I would like to have talked to more people. The polling, I think the polling was excellent. And even if we continue our town hall meetings, I'd like to have that, a polling list for items at those meetings that we could pass out and maybe receive back by the end of the meeting. That was really excellent. I think it gives us incentive to move forward on what the questions they raised on those pollings. So just like the mayor called in, and like we had 200 to 400 people on the line, all of those people had a chance to either go on to leave a message or whatnot, right?
Right.
I don't know how you got X'd out, Mayor.
I didn't stay on after the call.
Okay.
So when you said it was over, I got off.
You got off.
So maybe if I had stayed on, I could have.
But it, like you said, it tells you to push a number. Somebody should tell him just hang on or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
and they didn't.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think that needs to be looked into. Also, I think it's going to be very cost sensitive. So I think that's something we need to look into and compare the cost of doing our town hall meetings versus this and the people we're reaching. Because, I mean, at any town hall meetings I've ever had, I've never reached that many people. And I think that's what we're supposed to be doing. And I think it's excellent. And I think as we go along, we're going to get more and we'll be able to talk to more. I'd just like to see it go a little longer. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Mr. Callahan.
Oh, here we go. I can't really think of anything better than giving the residents and the voters and constituents, you know, every opportunity to be involved in the democratic process. And I, too, want to chime in that, Jill, you and your staff did a fabulous job, and I thought the technology was great. I think there's some things we can do to tweak that, and I think we will in the future. I do think also we can take our cell phone numbers from our campaigns, our town hall meetings. Perhaps we can glean numbers from our water bill customers as well as maybe from the permit departments. You know, there's got to be a lot of different departments within the city that has phone numbers, cell numbers that we can dump into the system. That way we can utilize that and continue to build a database over time. I had a question. Was there one given night that maybe seemed better than another, maybe a Monday, a Tuesday, a Thursday? And did you do any analysis on that?
I don't know, because we kind of got the odd nights, because Tuesdays, you all love the Tuesdays. And so,
yeah.
I mean, Mr. Atkins, your meeting was, is that a Thursday? I mean, it seemed to be pretty even because we did one. I mean, all of these numbers are pretty close in terms of participation. And so we had Thursday night, Wednesday night, I think Tuesday night. Yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. And they were all about the same.
You didn't see much drop off on Wednesday night?
No.
Okay.
All right. My area is a big church-going area, so I just chose not to do Wednesday night because I know it's a very active night, but now a lot of churches do Thursday night or even Friday nights. One thing I did like, you know, during the transit-oriented development process we had from the gentleman, I think, from Portland, Oregon, we had the clicker, you know, that you were talking about, the actual people that attended these TOD meetings. They could vote live, and you could see instantaneously all the information go up to the board. So I thought that was good.
Yeah.
I think a hybrid meeting, you know, might be a good way where we have do not only computer calls but also live questions at the same time. And even we could do one maybe with the mayor and then you could take a question for the mayor and then maybe a question for a council person and so forth. I was real pleased, by the way, Mayor, that you came to my town hall. I really appreciate that greatly. And also in my live town hall that we had, Ms. Soon was there. And then when AC came out to Carolyn and our joint town hall meeting, so I really appreciate that support. Another thing that I noticed that we were better able to control the questions and the timeline in this format better than the live, because a lot of people, they wanted to come and pontificate on 15 or 20 different things, and they took up most of the time. I think we handled more calls in this one-hour format than we did actually in a two-hour format. I know certainly the first one I had, because I had over 100 people, and many of those people weren't really very happy with the way things were going in Pleasant Grove. So we had too many people making speeches rather than asking questions on the budget. So I thought that was an interesting thing. But overall, I thought the process was fantastic. I think it needs to be more cost efficient in the future. I, like Councilman Kingston, think that we should pull in as much in-house equipment as possible here that we can, and I think the cost will begin to go down. But I really think we ought to look at the hybrid process. I like the live contact with citizens. I think that's very important, but I understand the wave of the future. Keep in mind, you know, people, they're dealing with kids. They've got homework. They've got soccer. They've got football. They've got church. They're all over the place, so it's difficult for them to get out to a library or a school for a couple of hours. It might be easier for them to drop in for an hour, hour and a half, because they can continue to help with their children's homework in between waiting on a call. So I just think time efficient wise, I think it really works. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Callahan. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. Well, Jerry, I just wanted to say that I noted that you and Sheffy were some of the first ones to sign up for this. And I thought, good for you guys. I really did. I thought the older council members, and I'm one of them, so I can say that, the older council members are taking the lead on this, and good for you guys. But I didn't, just because, like Ms. Davis and like Ms. Hill, I like that face-to-face component. I really enjoy talking to the folks in my district face-to-face. And that gives me an opportunity. And I go to all those HOA meetings just like all the rest of you do. But it just gives me another opportunity to talk to them, and I like that. I wanted to, and I'm going to continue to do that because I just really, like I said, I enjoy that. But I did want to talk about that polling aspect of it. I did something in my third and final town hall meeting because we got through the budget questions pretty quickly. So we were all in the plastic bag thing at that point. And so I asked everybody, I said, I'd like to see a show of hands on these different options that council has been given related to how we might deal with plastic bags. Should we ban them? Should we charge a fee? Should we study it some more? So I ran through these options. I think people really enjoyed being asked their opinion. And I saw a show of hands on the various options. And then they wanted to discuss it further. So we started discussing it further. And after we discussed it further for a while, they asked me, can we re-vote? And so the one thing I wanted to say about polling is when you ask somebody, like, how do you normally get information or what's the most important issues you see, that's pretty cut and dried and straightforward. But if you're going to start polling people on issues, you need some pretty, I think, good information and explanation about what all the different options are and what's involved before you ask them their opinion. Because sometimes the more information they have, they change their opinion, which is what happened when I asked them about it. So I just thought it was kind of an interesting experiment I did, and I do think people enjoyed hearing more about it and having an opportunity to weigh in, but they did change their mind as they heard the explanation. So I just, like, I think there's a place for polling, but when you have one of those buttons and you ask people and they hit it right away, you want them to hit it after they've had a pretty good explanation of what they're voting on and what their different options are. So I just wanted to mention that. And I do three of these budget town hall meetings, and I'm going to keep on doing three of them, and I'm going to keep on talking to people in person. Not that I, you know, I also wanted to mention to you all, when I first started in 1997, I used to get 200 people to each one of my budget town hall meetings. Now, my district was a whole lot bigger at that point. But over the years, I've often wondered why the attendance has fallen off. And part of it is that everybody is so busy. Now, I'd like to think they just think we do such a great job that they don't need to come and ask us questions and talk to us. But probably the reality is everybody's so busy now, they just can't get out and come to these meetings. But, I mean, honestly, it used to get 200 people, which was really terrific. So I guess the world is changing, and we have to try these new things. But it was great to be able to have that kind of input from that many folks. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. I will say, even though I wasn't able to get in, I got more information in that hour. I learned some things, okay? I mean, you know, but I mean, just the amount of information that came in that hour was very, very efficient for me, listening to other people ask questions and the like. There's something about kind of call-in that makes it tighter. I think the numbers speak for themselves, and as Mr. Dane said, you know, that's our job to kind of get to more people. I don't think any of us have to stop doing face-to-face conversation because one thing I'm not a big fan is of emails because people don't say, you know, how they feel to one another. They kind of type it in an email, and I think it's important to do that. That being said, you know, Mr. Gonzalez, I think one of the issues that's happening, or one of the opportunities we have as a city, is how we grow as we get this conversation between our citizens and the elected officials and city staff. You know, used to, I mean, we just kind of put roads out and police kind of showed up every once in a while. Then you had 911, and then we go to 311, And I think we're being responsible when people call in. What we're not very good at is going out. We have a terrible database management system, okay? We don't understand how to talk to our citizens in the right way. I think that if we all got behind this, we could dial up the involvement of our citizens in a major way. And I'm not saying everybody's got to opt in. Everybody's got to do their own thing. But if we said this is a major part of our strategy and we need to, this maybe be one leg of a communication strategy, and we start promoting it and we get the media involved and we get everybody that says this is your moment to do this, it's a very easy hour for citizens to sit there. They can be reading the paper and doing work and listening, and they can really get a lot of information very quickly. And I think we can get this to tens of thousands of people that are involved if we make this. I recognize that it's not perfect, but sometimes the enemy of good is perfect, and let's not try to, you know, over-engineer this thing too much. You know, let's take it to the next level and then the next level. I think we all do need to give the city manager some coaching if we want to spend some money in this next year, because we've just kind of, you know, dipped our toe into it. And I don't know what that is, but maybe we need to, if you're a fan of it and we want to do it, we need to kind of dial up that in our amendments. So anyway, thanks again. We want to create an environment where city staff brings us new ideas and we don't slap their hands. And I think this is a good example of being creative and pushing it. So thank you very much for that. With that, what I'm going to do is, Ms. Rios, is take our afternoon speakers now, okay, if anybody wants to speak, because we're kind of at the end of our agenda. We've got executive session, and I don't want to be rude to our speakers. We'll let them speak now, and then we'll just come back, close the meeting, and move on. Mr. Allen.
Just real quick on those budget amendments. Mr. Gonzalez reminded me that I will need those by noon on Friday because they will go out Friday night, I assume, in memo form. So noon on Friday, and love to visit along the way. I'll be available and make myself available. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So why don't we call our afternoon speakers?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your first speaker is going to be Albert Navafar, followed by Zumba Lunks, Kermit Mitchell, William Hopkins, Robert Ciccarelli, LaCoya London, Dolores Phillips, and Frank Ward. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe their same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making pertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council will be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. You will need to state your name and address for the record, as well as direct your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker is Albert Navafar.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor.
If you can speak into the microphone.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen of the City Council, my name is Albert Navafar, and I reside at the Seville Apartment at 10651 Stiffington Drive, Dallas, Texas.
You're going to just need to speak up just a little bit, or somebody the microphone, please.
Okay. Can you adjust the microphone, please? Good.
Yeah, please go ahead and start.
Okay. 10651 Stiffington Drive.
Thank you.
Dallas, Texas, 75205, apartment 5055. I have been having a difficulty with the city court compliance to manage the abuse that has taken place by the maintenance man and the management of the Seville apartment. The most effective time that the court compliance came in and got something effective, it was in 2011 when the maintenance man has been absorbed, tempering with the temperature of the hallway. He wasn't satisfied with that he shut down the air circulation completely at the hallway. And then I brought this to the city court compliance, and they came in, and we went through the floor, and I showed them the filth on the vent, and the air just wasn't there. And finally, the maintenance man brought the temperature to 83, which was 85, is acceptable to the court compliance. I don't know anybody at home will put a temperature of 85 when the temperature is out there, it's 110 or 100. Okay, so I don't know how they come up with the figure 85. It's a good temperature in the hallway at the fifth floor of the Seville. So what happened here in February of this year, the Seville apartment started the roof construction. And I lived there since 2002, April 2002, and never did experience any noise at all. And then finally, you know, when they started, there was a lot of noise during the day, late in the evening, and I never complained about that. But finally, one day, I picked up the phone and I talked with the management, and they say, it's almost true, we're going to get through with it. What happened after they completed the roof, I experienced vibration and noise shattering through the whole apartment day in, day out, 24 hours around the clock. The only logical explanation for this is or the management has removed some pads from the roof, which they admitted, and then they were going to put it in, and it took weeks before they got the pad, and then they put the pad in, and we had a quiet for 1 week. And then decided because we did not thank them enough for what they have done, so they reactivated the noise. I wonder what is going to take for the code compliance instead of coming in and just going around the apartment and not experiencing any noise violation, come in at 4 or 5 o'clock in the mornings when the walls vibrate and I experience a noise pollution that has disturbed me, I cannot go to sleep. So I don't know what it's going to take to have the court compliance to look into it. And I'm not an attorney, but I have to mention this. Am I going to have another minute?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay. That I'm not an attorney, and I'm not giving you any legal advice. I don't think anybody realized that we have about 2.5 million laws on the books. I don't know how many city codes compliance we have on the book, but there must be some violation that we can address in regard to the civil apartment and find out why this person continue to abuse the resident. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Hey, Jimmy Martin, who runs our code compliance, is here. And Jimmy, if you can just address this and talk about next steps, I'd appreciate it.
I just wanted to mention one more thing. I don't think the city code compliance have the force of the law. There is something illegal that's happening at the civil apartment, which the police department need to go get involved and investigate.
Mr. Martin will look into it. Thank you.
Your next speaker is Ozumba Luntz, not present. Kermit Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell will be followed by William Hopkins and Robert Ciccarelli. City Council, you will find at your seat a handout by Mr. Mitchell.
Drawing your attention, my name is Kermit Mitchell, 5659 Marblehead Drive, Dallas, Texas. And at your position, you'll have two handouts from me, if you will. One is showing that $388 million for the Omni Dallas Convention Center Hotel Series B bond. We have 1% of that would be $3,888,000 per year times 30 years, which is the bond length, is $116 million. That is what has been lost by the city of Dallas by not refinancing at 3.5% when we want to buy it at 3.5% while the interest rates are now 4.5%. I just listened to DFW talk about saving $1 billion by refinance. We're not refinancing. We're looking to buy this hotel at lower rates. And as rates go up, it's a simple equation. The income is there. You've got the interest rates, and you've got the principal that can be paid. Money made is going to stay the same. But as interest rates go up, you can pay less on the hotel. We can't pay as much into it if the interest rates go up. I'm going to just say that that's $8,000 approximately per seat of every person sitting here. $116 million was lost. So consequently, what we're asking, and it isn't about that you didn't know. Maybe some didn't know before. And you can say it's not my fault. But if I look at many of the lawyers and judge here, it's about that you knew or should have known. And ignorance is no excuse. But right now, you do know. So consequently, as we do know, what do we do about it? That's where we're at right now. So consequently, business as usual, kicking this down the road and everything, only cost us money. That's me being a Dallas person also. It cost us money. Right now, second slide that I have before you is showing that there's $479 million of debt in the Dallas Convention Center Hotel Development Corporation, which owns the hotel. The hotel is only appraised at $217 million with the land with it, or $223 million. We have to sell, really, the hotel out of that bathwater. We've got to get the baby out of that bathwater. That's what I'm here about, and consequently what we have is a proposal. We're not looking to buy everything. We're only talking about the bricks and mortar that Kingsley talked about. The city owns 2 minutes. We're looking only to buy the bricks, the steel, the glass, and et cetera. Omni's going to still run the hotel. So we're not endangering the hotel by buying it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is William Hopkins, not present. Robert Ciccarelli, not present. LaCoya London. Ms. London will be followed by Dolores Phillips and Frank Ward.
Hello, LaCoya London, 1873 Mockingbird. Okay, I'm here because I mean, I listened to everything with the DP. The DPD said, I mean, Chief Brown, he said the other day, well, probably some weeks ago, he said that 1% of the police department is bad. And I need him to correct himself because it's worse than that. It's about 30 to 40% is bad, you know. So I need him to really look at his statistics and really do the research so he can see what's really bad. I see he's gone, but he needs to do some more research on that. Okay, then we're talking about I want to talk about genetics, DISD, DPD, all of them, all together, dealing with ADHD. You know, you're giving these kids this medicine, which has long-term effects on them. You know, they can have strokes, you know, heart attacks. Little kids can have strokes, heart attacks, and all this kind of stuff, you know. And you said that it was going to help them with their behavior, some behavior modification-like things, you know. And many doctors know that it has an effect on these children, you know. So if you got them taking them to Timberland, putting them in the back of a squad car, taking them to Timberland, when they throw a temper tantrum, when most of these kids are bored, most of these kids in the school system is bored. They have teachers that can't even teach them. They can't really do anything with them because they're not qualified really to be teachers. You know, you're not going to go into no room full of nuns. I mean, come on now. Ain't no kid going to sit there and just be quiet. You know, you got to teach them. You got to say, hey, let's do the ABCs. I mean, you got five-year-olds going to Timberland. Are y'all serious? In Dallas, Texas. So you can't tell me that these kids are bad, but you can do something with these kids. But they can't keep putting them in these cars and just taking them on to Timberland, giving them this medicine, which is part of genetics, you know. I mean, back in 1929 through 1970, they were sterilizing folks. Make sure they having one kid and all this kind of crap. So now you're giving them medicine, hardcore medicine, that's going to affect their brain. They can't even function. I mean, for example, my daughter, nine years old, had a slight stroke off that ADHD medicine. Yes, she did. And guess what? MetroCare walked away. They didn't want to deal with us no more because of her mother. You know, yeah, the backbone I had. You almost killed my kid and you walked away. Then she was handcuffed. Then DISD broke a bone.
Thank you, Ms. Lund.
In June.
Thank you, Ms. Lund. Thank you.
Your next speaker is Dolores Phillips. Ms. Phillips will be followed by Frank Ward.
My name is Dolores Phillips. I'm presently at 2001 San Antonio Street, Grand Prairie, Texas, 75051. Mel Rollins, I just wanted to share with you that from the time Mr. McQuarrie shared with Coach Paterno at Penn State that he actually saw a sexual act between Sandusky and a child, it was almost 8 years until that horrific madness got in the hands of someone who was sincerely concerned, and almost 10 years until it was taken to trial. I share this with you because it's no doubt in my mind, I believe if I was a non-minority standing before a minority mayor and all minority council members, that me alleging that a 911 call had been altered, someone would have sit down with me physically one-on-one and spoke with me. I never received the 817 call, requested it the next day, never received the 855 call, and it's a cover-up, and it continues to be a cover-up, and you can never truly build as an individual, a city, a country, a state, until you address such a horrific act. Some problems address and take care of themselves, but not corruption such as this.
Before I made it to the house. So I listened to the CD, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe that was just an error, but in my request,
was that? They were.
So they didn't give you the 818 where you talked to her?
No, sir.
So you to come to Dallas?
No, sir. No. And, sir, and the thing is, they did that. I filed a warrant complaint in federal court, and UPS retaliated immediately upon my return to work because they dare minorities to stand up and say, hey, look, I don't want you to roll out the red carpet. All I want is fair and equal treatment.
With that being said, it is not only mind-boggling to me how you take not only a few words out of a 911 call, but you take an entire conversation out of the who, why, what, when, and where. Mind you, we're talking about a workplace altercation where you not hear on the 911 call the operator being concerned about the security of the responding officer or officers, and she didn't have to ask because I told her everything she needed to know without her asking. No, you don't hear that. Why you don't hear it? Because they altered it being as a cover-up because I am a minority and all the persons behind the scenes are non-minorities.
Thank you. Your final speaker, Frank Ward, is not present. That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Well, it is 11:21. No. No. I'll call you in a moment. It's now 11:21 a.m., September 4th, 2013. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda: City of Dallas v. Jeffrey S. Woolley, Cheryl L. Woolley, Michael D. Wiley, Vicki Wiley et al., and Anna G. Martinez v. City of Dallas. For those of you here, we're not going to be doing any more business after this. We will come back into session, but mainly to get Ms. Hill to move for adjournment. So we'll stay here. And, before we go, I think we've got a presentation by Mr. Griggs.
Well, we have a very special birthday. Here is the person who sits straight across the way. That's you, Mr. Jerry Allen. Before she gets going, I'll say it twice, Jerry. Happy birthday, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jerry. Happy birthday to you. Ooh, what is that German? Is that German chocolate? Is that German chocolate? Ooh, that's my favorite. There we go. It is now 11:37 a.m. September 4th. The City Council went into closed session, and we met under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, received advice from and consulted with the City Attorney on the following matters described in the agenda: City of Dallas v. Jeffrey S. Woolley, Cheryl L. Woolley, Michael D. Wiley, Vicki Wiley et al., Anna G. Martinez v. City of Dallas. We're back in the session, and the meeting's adjourned. Thank you.